Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Trying to finish up a long work day here on the home front. It's been a busy day. Had to get up and do some radio, of course, and then we spent about 5 hours covering all the press conferences for the Starkville Regional. You can view those for free over at jeanspage.com or just read the transcript. And again, as I committed to you guys, we would do our very best to ensure that you got the most comprehensive coverage of a regional in the country this weekend. And we're already off to a good start. So come join us at jeanspage.com. You know, hey, it's a passion for us, but it's also a job and it's a responsibility that we have to all of you. It was super nice, too, just like having a chance to just kind of sit and talk with everybody as they're so excited, they're so expectant, and really feeling a sense of accomplishment, you know, like especially like a team like Lipscomb, right? We're going to talk a lot about them today, but, you know, when they left Starkville, Mississippi, they left with their tail between their legs. They got beat 26-0 in Game 3. They were competitive in Game 1. They were somewhat competitive in Game 2. But they were not competitive at all in Game 3, and State absolutely destroyed them. And, you know, Coach Foreman, I give him a lot of credit. He said that they had to kind of evaluate some things after that. He said, you know, we kind of got our nose bloodied a little bit. We had to kind of evaluate where we were, and we had to move some guys around. We had some guys in the bullpen that we moved to starters. We had some starters we moved to the bullpen. And lo and behold, they end up winning their league. And so now here they are. Back in Starkville, Mississippi, and you know, Cincinnati I thought was great. You guys may not know this, but coach at Cincinnati was at Central Michigan for the 19 regional. They came in here then, and you know, fire up chips, right? And he joked around. He said, you know, I asked him about the Yoda mask, and he laughed. He goes, no, we don't have that anymore. The NCAA kind of curtailed all that stuff. I said, well, you can thank Tony Vitello for that, and he laughed. But he goes, yeah, I don't know that Miami really appreciated it that much. But anyway, that's where he is now, and it should be no surprise that Cincinnati's doing well. But we look forward to seeing them. Some pitching matchups, too. As you guys know, Duke Stone will toe the rubber for Mississippi State in Game 1. Maybe a little bit of a surprise. I thought we would go with McPherson here, but we're going to go with Duke Stone. Duke had a great outing against Lipscomb. Lipscomb is going to go back to Alexander Guinness, who we'll talk more about him in our first segment of the show. He threw the Friday game against Mississippi State and shut us out for 5 innings. We finally got to him there in the sixth and chased him on out of the ball game and won 8-3. Now, UL, a little bit banged up on the pitching side. And you'd expect that, I mean, playing 7 games last week, right? They played 7 games last week. It's crazy to think about that. And nearly won the championship game. It's nuts, man. I mean, it really is. And it says a lot about Matt Deggs and that staff and really the commitment of that roster to get things done. But they're not throwing their number one tomorrow. And some of that, you know, we talk about teams throwing off these days. So much of that is because people are just tender this time of year. Just how it is. Now, UL is going to throw, I'm pulling the numbers up right now, they're going to throw Cody Brash, who has only been a starter for about the last month, but he has been absolutely outstanding for them. 21 appearances this year, 7 starts. He is a 6-2 record with an ERA of 2.04, and he can bring it up there, you know, high 90s, right around 100. Batting average against is just 181. So they feel pretty confident in him. Andrew Herman, Coach Degg said he wasn't sure kind of what his role is going to be this weekend. He has logged 103.2 innings. There's not a lot of pitchers in the country with 100-plus innings, but that's the case for him. 4 complete games, 18 appearances, 17 starts. Now, Coach did say that Ty Roman would likely start Game 2. He's had 20 appearances, 16 starts, a 4.48 ERA, and has worked just over 80 innings. So we'll probably see him in Game 2, no matter who they play. And then we'll see what happens with Andrew Herman. Andrew did come to the press conference, super nice guy. He's a believer. He quoted John 15 when I asked him, you know, about, hey, what do you do? I mean, how do you attribute all of this longevity and stamina? And he goes, man, I would just lay down my life for my brothers. And, man, you got to love that, right? You do. But they're going to see Cincinnati's top guy. So it'll be kind of one versus two. Now, to be fair, you know, you down the stretch, UL maybe is throwing their best pitcher of the last month. But Nathan Taylor, who is 6-3 in 15 appearances with a 3.86 ERA, he has logged a staff-high 84 innings. He will get the nod tomorrow to kind of get Cincinnati off on the right foot. Coach did mention that you know, we'll see Carson Marsh at some point. And, again, you can read these transcripts. But they got a handful of guys. Logan Knight is a guy. UL is going to be down a player. And there's a couple other guys that are banged up. But, you know, we'll just kind of see how things play out. But that's your pitching matchups. And, of course, all games can be streamed to the ESPN platform. And then, of course, we'd love to see you at Duty Noble Field. Tickets are still available. Again, it's going to be a great weekend. First time in 5 years that we've hosted a regional at Duty Noble Field. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. If you're on your way to Starkville, you can stop in Tupelo. You can stop in the Ridge and Flowood area, or you can wait until you get to the great city of Starkville, and you can enjoy some great restaurant-quality hamburgers. Bulldog Burger Company always comes through for us with great consistency, great service, great food at a great price, great atmosphere. It's all great, right? And I encourage you to get those spring rolls. Some of you, including myself, are kind of lacking a little bit in the beauty department, and so we've got to do whatever we can to improve our good looks, to make the world a more beautiful place. Have the spring rolls. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And then find your own favorites. Whether it is the Bulldog, which is just a straight-ahead rock and roll good American hamburger, or maybe walk on the wild side a little bit. Maybe get the Freshman 15, the Bryant. There's a lot of good options to choose from. And, of course, those smash burgers are absolutely outstanding. If you haven't had those, you owe it to yourself to try those. And then get that chocolate chip. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. As noted, Mississippi State will take on Lipscomb in the first game of the weekend to open up the Starkville Regional. So let's kind of take a look and see what they've done, you know, since they visited Starkville. After that 26-0 shellacking, you know, they started Jackson Lee, and he ended up moving to the PIM. State with a dozen runs there in the third. We allowed just one hit in this game, and they dropped a 6-8 on the year. And again, had to do kind of some soul searching before they got into league play. You just got to figure out, it's like, hey, listen, sometimes you learn a lot by losing. You know, the only thing I've really learned from losing is that I don't like doing it. But they went to Memphis shortly after they left Starkville. They get beat 5-2. And then they open up Atlantic Sun play, like everybody else, right? 4 weeks in, that's what we do. They take two out of three for North Alabama, who had one of the better offenses in the Atlantic Sun. So that was a good win early on. Then they get Austin Peay. They take two out of three from those guys. One of those, a 19-5 decision in the rubber game. They travel to Belmont. They beat them. They get two out of three from Eastern Kentucky. They get lose two out of three in Louisville to Bellarmine. And that was an upset, right? They lose to Middle 5-3. But again, you're seeing some more competitive scores. Central Arkansas, they take one from there. They lose 15-1 at Vanderbilt. They get North Alabama again in Florence and take two out of three. They lose at Tennessee 14-4. They get Austin Peay again and win two out of three. This time it's in Nashville. They lose to Tennessee Tech in a Mercy Rule game, bounce back to take two out of three from the Colonels of Eastern Kentucky. They get Bellarmine at their place, and this time they sweep them. And that's a huge, huge weekend for them when you start stacking wins like that. They go to Conway, Arkansas, the final weekend of the regular season, and take two out of three from the Bears. And listen, we played the Bears before, too. They're scrappy. But a couple of those games were, you know, really, 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 really competitive. But that middle game was 16-5. And, again, Lipscomb's kind of found some offense. They find their way into the Atlantic Sun tournament, really in great positioning. And they get Florida Gulf Coast 4-1, and Alexander Guinness started that game and worked into the eighth. Really good outing for him. They get North Alabama in the winner's bracket game, and they win an extra inning affair 4-3. Sets up a championship game. Of course, North Alabama would have had to beat Lipscomb twice. And the bullpen for Lipscomb comes through. They win a second extra inning game 5-4. And so at the end of it all, again, they leave here 6-8, and they end the season up 29-24 overall, but 19-11 in the Atlantic Sun, and then they win the Atlantic Sun tournament to get the automatic bid. And they've actually been pretty good away, right? They're 10-13 in true road games and then 3-0 on a neutral field. Now, this is, while this is technically a neutral field, it's an away game in a place that's been a house of horrors for them. But nevertheless, this is a Lipscomb team. It's a completely different team than they were when we played them before. That's not to say they've upgraded their talent. They just kind of found their rhythm. They've won five straight. And you think about that. They're 24-24, right? So you go, 18-16 down a stretch, and all of a sudden you find a five-game winning streak to close it out when you need it the most. You're playing for seeding, getting that big series win at Central Arkansas, and then you sweep through the Atlantic Sun tournament. And I tell you, this, the look on those young men's faces today, it's the kind of stuff that reminds you why you do this thing in the first place. I mean, truly. Listen, these guys don't have any illusions about coming in here winning this game. They don't. But they're going to give us their best effort. Cam Pruitt was one of the young men that we had a chance to visit with today. He leads the team with a .356 batting average. Got a couple jacks, 48 RBI, 15 of 22 in stolen bases. And the strikeout percentage is pretty good there, 29 Ks and 205 at-bats. Aaron Stelgionis. Was also present today. He's been in and out of the lineup a little bit. He's missed a handful of games. Said he's been a little bit beat up, but he feels great right now and is eager to get going. He had a big weekend against us. It just felt like every time he came up, he got a base hit. And a lot of them were base hits that started rallies or capped rallies. But good player nonetheless. And Hudson Miles has had a pretty good year for him as well. He's played in all 53 games that they've played this year. But their leading power hitter is Jordan Thomas. Jordan Thomas hitting .309, 10 jacks, 40 RBI. Not a lot of walks, but also not a lot of strikeouts. 152 at-bats, 14 walks, 29 Ks. He's also 9 of 12. They are 73 of 98 in stolen bases. Guys, of all the statistics that I've run for you guys at Gene's Page and on this show this week, really the only one that we have been dramatically behind in has been stolen bases. We have stolen the fewest amount of bases of anybody in this regional. That is something we're going to have to contend with, really no matter who we play. And if you're Lipscomb, you can come out here and just throw caution to the wind. You got nothing to lose. We talked about Hudson Miles earlier. He's 14 of 15 in stolen bases. So game two, you're going to see Tico, right? And that's a left-hander. We expect to see, you know, we expect to win tomorrow and then see, you know, Cincinnati or Louisville, but Louisiana, but either one of those has stolen over 100 bags. So having a lefty in that makes a lot of sense. And the reality of it is, my whole opinion about that is throw your best guy in the biggest games. And that's the thing about game two in a regional. Either you got to win it to stave off elimination or you got to win it to stay in the winner's bracket and then force everybody else to beat each other up to get back for the right to play you in a regional final. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense for me for that to be the case. Now, get over to the pitching side here. Alexander Guinness, we talked about him, 15 starts this year. He has shown some real stamina. He has been a reliever his entire career. He got one start at Nova Southeastern of Division II last year, re-entered the portal, landed at Lipscomb, and has basically inserted himself into that weekend rotation. In those 15 starts, he's worked 75 innings. So you can kind of begin to do the math there. He's about a six-inning guy, 5 to 6 innings, even though as of late he has worked into the seventh and eighth innings when they've absolutely had to have him. But 5.40 ERA. I mean, the win-loss record's not great. One of his better starts of the year came against Mississippi State. What's also interesting, too, and you expect the guy that throws a lot to give up a lot too, but he leads the staff allowing 8 home runs. He's tied for that. And then 11 wild pitches and 11 hit by pitches. And so One of the things that we've seen, and there'll be a scouting report that'll run tomorrow morning at jeanspage.com, is that he has been a little less reliant on the fastball. And part of that, too, even in the Atlantic Sun, people were kind of timing up the fastball a little bit. So we had to get a little craftier. Now, we talked about Jackson Lee earlier. Jackson Lee, of course, the loser in that 26-0 game. They have moved him to the pen. And now he has made three starts on the year, but 13 relief appearances, and has three saves to show for it. And he is a guy, too, that, a younger guy they're really excited about. He got off to a really good start this year, and they elected to start him against us. It just didn't quite work out. Cole O'Brien is a guy, obviously, that hadn't pitched in a long time, that we were curious if he would pitch against us. He has not pitched really since before Mississippi State, just three starts on the year. So, you know, we expect to see some dudes like. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Caleb Cantalo, we didn't see him last time. I don't think we did, but he's got 9 saves on the year, 16 appearances, 1.69 ERA, and a batting average against of 178. But, you know, the bottom line is we need to go take care of business. Colin Bosley-Smith, we'll probably see him at some point this weekend. But, you know, my thing is, like, once we win, I want these guys to do well. I believe Coach said that Jace Trautner will probably start game two for them. You know, again, it's just they got to figure it out, right? Everybody's got to figure it out. But the main thing for Mississippi State, we got to come out there early and build a lead and kind of relax everybody a little bit. And that's the thing, too. You never know what kind of start you're going to get at the plate, right? You just simply never know. You know, I think the second time around, you know, seeing – Guinness the second time, especially knowing that he kind of dotted us up a little bit. He struck out 4 and didn't walk anybody in his outing against us. It was Drew Weyers that got to him, and then right behind him, he was already starting to fade some. Weyers leads off the 6th inning with a home run, and then Ace and Noah both just hit some balls just like rifle shots. And they said, hey, let's go to the pen here, and then we just kind of opened it up from there. I think one of the main things that we need to do here is we need to get a lead early. And honestly, I think we're a better offense than we were even back then because we faced some adversity. And you guys know we are 23-2 against non-conference opponents. And 3 of those wins came against Lipscomb. You know, again, it's well documented. Our 2 losses were the number 1 UCLA and then at the time number 10 Southern Miss. Both of those teams are within the top 9 national seeds. Everybody else has kind of, you know, gotten their fannies packed a little bit. And so I think that'll be the case as we get into Friday. Again, 1 p.m. is your first pitch. And then we will hang around and then cover the second game and interview those coaches and kind of find out what their pitching plans are for game 2. We'll have a pitching preview for you on Saturday. But also, too, on Saturday, we're going to be trying to catch up with official visitors. That there will be 9 or 10. You know, I haven't confirmed who all showed up today. It's been busy. But, yeah, the official visits are underway. So we're going to do our best to catch up with all those guys on Saturday and kind of make sure that you guys are apprised of that. We're not going to abandon football, even though the regional right now is kind of dominating the conversation. Listen, we don't mind doing double duty. In addition to that, obviously, you know, disappointed with today's result from Oklahoma City with softball. But, you know, we're keeping an eye on all that stuff, too. And that's what you depend on us for. And we're happy to provide that for you. But, again, we'll be at Duty Noble Field every game. We will cover every single game, no matter who's playing, no matter what the rain delay looks like. This is what we're here for. And it's not just for the free hot dog and a seat on press row. You know, we are there to work and to provide you guys with quality information. And so I think what you're going to see happen in this Lipscomb game is I think State's going to get out early and Duke Stone's going to give you a good start. And then we're going to kind of go see how things happen. And of course, you know, you go back and think about, you know, we do a one hitter, a one hit shutout against those guys back on March 5th or March 7th, pardon me. And just kind of looking back at this box score, too, really looking more at the pitching side of things. Cole Pippinger was a pinch hitter, got the only hit of the ball game for them. Pretty crazy when you go back and look at all that stuff, right? But Duke Stone worked four innings, four perfect innings, striking out six, walking nine, went just 56 pitches. Of course, back in those days, everybody was on a pitch count. Charlie Foster came in and threw one inning of one-hit relief. Dane Burns gives you a perfect inning of relief, and in Parker Rhodes, you know, gives up nothing, you know. And so a lot of young guys have pitched. Of course, Dane's been around a little while, but the one hit comes against Charlie, and he only threw 12 pitches. And the Bulldogs get through this game, obviously, in seven innings, but we only threw 89 pitches. Walked one, gave up one hit, allowed two base runners in the ballgame. And, again, that's always impressive when you could do something like that. And, again, you go back and look at kind of your hitting heroes. Drew Weyers went 3-for-3 as your leadoff hitter that day. Ace goes 2-for-3. Noah Sullivan goes 3-for-4. We had six RBIs. Vitas Valenkis, or Vitas, goes 2-for-3 in the ballgame. Sean James, 1-for-3 in the ballgame. Garrick Fry, 1-for-4. Ryder Woodson goes 1-for-2, has a couple of RBI. Blake Bevis gets in the game 2-for-3 in that ballgame. Bryce Chance goes 1-for-1, but also has a walk. We pull some people. And this is back when Jacob Parker wasn't starting. And we put him in the ballgame, and he goes 2-for-3 because the game got away from him pretty quickly. And, again, it's so crazy to go back and think about a time when Jacob Parker wasn't the starter. Pretty incredible. And Bulldogs really just kind of took batting practice in this ballgame. Malewski, Sullivan, and Fry all with home runs in this ballgame. And, you know, it's interesting, too, you go back and you look at all this. It's not like that, you know, Lipscomb just kind of, you know, came out there and laid down for us. I mean, you know, Jackson Lee was just hittable. You know, seven runs on seven hits in two innings. And then from there, the wheels just kind of fell off. The next two pitchers, Brock Puckett and Mag Mabry, did not retire a hitter and gave up 10 runs combined. All told, the Bulldogs score 26 runs on 20 hits, 10 walks, and we struck out just four times. And a couple of those came late in the ball game with some younger guys in the game. So now we get ready to go do it again. And not expecting a 26-0 decision, but we certainly expect Mississippi State to win this ball game. Looking at the other side of this thing, the back side of the bracket, you know, the thing that's so interesting to me about Cincinnati is, yes, they played arguably their worst game of the year, according to their players, against Arizona State. And the game was not competitive. I think we've talked about that earlier in the week. It wasn't a good game. And there's so much riding on that game, and you feel like you've done enough to make a regional, and they had. But had they made a run in the Big 12 tournament, you never know what it's going to do to the RPI. And they're one of those teams, too, that you know, kind of looking back at this thing, it's so interesting, kind of in hindsight. But, you know, Cincinnati's one of those teams that had some head-scratching losses, but had some other ones you look at and say, you know what, makes a lot of sense. But they finished 22 in the RPI. They're right there with Arkansas. Right there with Arkansas's 21, Cincinnati's 22. And so you begin to kind of look at that aspect of it, too. Both of them go 17 and 13 in their league. And Arkansas plays deeper into the tournament, so as a result, they're two up in the win column. But they both lost 20 games this year. And so had Cincinnati maybe beaten Arizona State and, you know, maybe made a little bit of run in the Big 12 tournament because you know how crazy that thing got, you can kind of look back and say, you know what, hey, Cincinnati could have easily played their way into a hosting situation with another win or two, right? I mean, it's just that simple. They were in the conversation at one point, and then UL, of course, they make a run in the Sun Belt and end up 33 in the RPI. So, you know, we're going to have two top 35 RPI teams in our regional. And I understand what a lot of people are saying. You know, it's like, hey, your state got a sweet draw. I think we got a good draw. But anybody expecting Cincinnati or UL to come in here and just say, ah, you know, it's not going to work out. We're just going to come here and get the T-shirt and go home. It's just not going to happen that way. But what's interesting, too, is, you know, we talk about how parallel Arkansas and Cincinnati are. They both have two quad three losses and three quad four losses. That's how close it was. Again, just one spot away in the RPI. It's just so interesting, you know. Everybody thinks they have a case, and then they think everybody behind them doesn't. You know, it's just kind of funny how that all plays out. But the reality of it is, I expect that ball game between Cincinnati and Louisiana to be a lot of fun to watch. There's going to be a lot of bunts. There's going to be a lot of runs. They're going to steal a lot of bases, or at least attempt to. And Cincinnati's got some guys that can run the ball out of the ballpark. And again, throwing their starter, which I think is probably the smart thing to do when you're a two, especially playing a red-hot Louisiana team that went, again, played seven games last week and went 5-2 and had an opportunity to beat Southern Miss on Sunday and had a couple of opportunities with the bases loaded they didn't come through with, according to Coach Deggs. And so that team has got some toughness about them. But I think if you're a fan of college baseball, hang around tomorrow if you've got all-session tickets. Not to mention, where else would you rather be in the world than at Duty Noble Field, right? We haven't been able to celebrate this for a long time. I'm going to be out walking around, too. You know, we'll go to postgame, but I'm going to enjoy getting out, being with our fans, and enjoying our family, and enjoying our ballpark, and enjoying the fact that we've got postseason baseball right back here in Starkville, Mississippi. I know many of you feel the same way I do. You're like, Steve, I'm going to take in every inning. Right? I'm not going to have a cold beer. You can drink some on my behalf, but I can tell you, I'm going to enjoy this weekend. Not just because of the fact that I'm enjoying covering Mississippi State, but I'm enjoying the fact that we have returned postseason baseball back to Duty Noble Field, where it should always be. And I know that only 16 teams get to do it. One of the things that a friend of mine talked about, too, in many respects, this will probably be the worst team Brian O'Connor fields at Mississippi State. Now, you never know what's going to happen on the health front. But Brian O'Connor, obviously, is, you know, consistency is his middle name, right? They didn't make the tournament last year, and it was really kind of a shame because they got hot late and ran through the ACC, and they had a cancellation that basically cost them. Right? They had some bad losses early, but a lot of people thought they may sneak into the tournament. They didn't, which worked out well for us because they were here when we got back. But Brian O'Connor knows what fits his system, and again, there'll be the portal class. We'll add some pieces there. We don't know how in-depth it's going to be yet, and at this point, it doesn't really matter. We shouldn't even be talking about that, right? We should be talking about what's happening now, not about what's happening next year. I thought O'Connor kind of addressed that today, too, when he said, you know, yeah, we've got some guys on our staff that are monitoring what's happening in the portal, but we're focused on our guys. We're focused on this team and this moment, and that's what every moment builds towards. It's postseason baseball. Everything we do, from portal work to recruiting work to development work, summer work, everything that we do, non-conference play, everything is to position ourselves to be in a good position in the postseason. And now here we are. And so sometimes, you know, as a guy that's covered recruiting much of my career, I can tell you, sometimes, you know, recruiting is the thing in football when you're having a bad year that kind of makes you feel like, well, there's some hope for the future. Guys, the future is here right now in baseball, right? It's here right now. So we're not going to spend a lot of time, you know, chasing information about the portal because Brian O'Connor and those guys are just not engaged yet with the portal. You've got some staffers that are evaluating players and reaching out and kind of expressing interest and kind of finding out what's going on with them. But the head coach, the head ball coach, and his guys are working to get to Omaha. And so we're going to kind of share that mission with them. And skew our coverage to ensure that we are providing you all with the best possible coverage. And I had somebody in the industry tell me, he said, no team is covered as in-depth as Mississippi State is in the country because of the work that you guys do over Gene's Page. Now, I wear that like a badge of honor. We do take a lot of pride in what we do, and we hope that you'll come join us. All right, time for today's top 10 list, as always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E, close with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. He knows how to get things done when so many other people don't. And you know what? Maybe you've applied before and you got turned down. Maybe it wasn't the right time. Or maybe you had the wrong loan officer. If you're not ready, Blair can put you on a path to get you ready to make the dream of home ownership come true for you. It's true. Got several Boneyard listeners that can attest to that. We've had several loans close with Blair over the years. And one of my favorite ones is this guy hit me up and said, hey, man, my dad was trying to buy a game day condo. He's having all kinds of problems. We needed to close right away because the contract date was coming up. Blair got the thing done in about a week, right? Now, of course, that one was ready to go. Again, just needed a little massaging, and we got it done, right? So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, perhaps that game day condo for you that may be more affordable than you think, or maybe you need to refinance, get some cash out, refinance some debt, whatever, it's up to you. Blair Chandler is there to help you. His phone number, 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. Save that number on your phone as Mortgage Guy. You may forget the name, you won't forget the need, and you'll already have a Mortgage Guy when you're ready for a mortgage. That's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, had a request. Steve, I love the 90s rock. And I remember listening to all the great stuff on the radio. And, of course, like, the, you know, the big names, you know, you remember those. But there were some obscure songs, and they gave me one of their favorites. Said, hey, kind of, can you get in this vein? Well, yes, I can. Yes, I can. One of the things that I'll tell you guys, too, and some of you don't want to hear this, but I'm going to say it anyway. A lot of the 90s stuff doesn't hold up today. It doesn't. And I think when you look back now in hindsight and you see the talent that preceded the 90s and you see what's happened today, you kind of begin to realize we went through kind of a messy period of transition. And there were a lot of bands, too, that were trying to be Nirvana. And not everybody had the vocal stylings to be Soundgarden, but a lot of people kind of like were inspired by Nirvana and Pearl Jam and said, hey, I want to go that route. And some people had to be a little more sophomoric and things like that just to kind of get some attention. And a lot of these bands you've forgotten for a reason, okay? And listen, we're going to take a little trip down memory lane here, and we're going to have some fun here today. But some of these songs and bands, there's a reason that you don't hear them anymore and they don't perform anymore. And that's not to say they weren't talented for the time. It's just it doesn't hold up. Okay, some of them do, and a couple of these bands, I can't believe they're not still together. But here we go, kind of the second generation of new metal. And some of you may be somewhat unfamiliar with this band, but it's Prong, and the track is Snap Your Fingers, Snap Your Neck. So, yeah, it's a little violent, but it's true. But yeah, it's kind of that guttural sound. It's not like, it doesn't sound evil. You know, it sounds kind of like, you know, somebody's got a little bit of a deep rasp. We probably smoked a couple of packs of Winston's before they went to the studio. But nevertheless, Prong at number 10. A band that a lot of people thought was like the next big thing in alternative music. And you know what? I really dug them. I did. They went on hiatus for a while. They were around from early 90s to late 90s and then kind of disappeared. They've come back. They've reunited. And so if you were into the band Failure, I've got some good news for you. They got some new stuff out, and I didn't know this until I put this list together. And you may be happy to know there's a brand new album from Failure called Location Lost that is out now. They've collaborated with some more modern people. But man, you go back and think about it. Comfort was a great album. Magnified was great. Fantastic Planet may be like their Joshua Tree. They were a great band. But music kind of began to change, right? And the truth of the matter is, a lot of you guys don't want to admit this, but we kind of got tired of hearing about everybody's problems. We did. We just kind of wanted to have a good time. We didn't need every song to be about ruminating over something negative. And Failure was one of those bands that kind of followed in that same depressive vein of Nirvana. I'm not being difficult, I'm just saying. We're going to go with the track Stuck on You at number 9. Number 8, I really like this band too, Placebo. And they're another band that just, again, had a run and then it kind of faded. Great track called Every You, Every Me. And I think you'll enjoy that one. It's a really good vocal. Number 7, a band that was really kind of silly, but man, they were good. They were really good. And I hope they're still out there playing because they brought a lot of smiles to a lot of people's faces because they didn't take life too seriously. It's the band Local H. And we're going to go with a different one. We featured them on the show before. We're going to go with All the Kids Are Right. All the Kids Are Right at number 7. Number 6, I think we've had this song before. I think. I've got a sampler CD out there when they were an unsigned band. So I've got the kind of maybe unmastered track, like before they signed a big record deal. It's a band called Dog's Eye View. They had a big hit called Everything Falls Apart. It's a good track. We'd like the number 1 on the modern rock charts for a while. Number 5, and you can thank Brian Haydad for kind of bringing this one back, because it used to be kind of the intro to the B&B show. Yeah, Brian and Bob. And remember, it was like a Renardo Sidney free throw from the Cotton District. I mean, there was a lot to it. And Space Hog was the theme song of the B&B show. It was great. And then, of course, you know, everybody involved with music's like, hey, you can't keep doing that. But yeah, in the meantime, from Space Hog, great track, man. And again, they were kind of a one-hit wonder, but man, how great was that song? Kind of the rest of the way, that's how it's going to be. Number 4, a band that I don't think got their just due from the 90s. And I think it's worth your time, if you like 90s music, to go back and check out this band and maybe work through some albums you're unfamiliar with. We're talking Our Lady Peace at number 4. And probably their biggest hit was Clumsy. And man, I tell you, when you put it on, it's like a time machine, right? It just brings me back to those times in my life. I'm like, dude, I remember where I was living. And, you know, it's just crazy how it works. Music's the greatest time machine the world ever invented, until H.G. Wells and Albert Einstein's work collaborates. Number 3, absolutely dug this one, man. This, like, when I first heard this, I was like, these guys are going to go somewhere. Turns out they really didn't. But it's Sponges Plowed. You know, and you know it. It's like, in a world of human wreckage, you know, the guitar on this is what sets it apart. Like, they come right out of the gate, just kind of cutting your head off, man. It's a great, great track. One of my favorites, and it's kind of a silly song. And again, there were a lot of bands, of course, that were trying to find their own niche. And this is one of them. And it's a band called The Refreshments. I think they were pretty much a one-hit wonder. Great track called Bandidos. And I remember so many people, like, it's like it was popular for like 30 minutes. But I love the track. And putting it on now makes me happy. It does. I put it on earlier and I watched the video and I was like, I'd forgotten how much fun this thing was. You know, meet me at the mission at midnight. We'll divvy up there. Yeah. Because the world is full of stupid people, right? And there's just so much of that. There's so much of it that was irreverent in a very funny and unoffensive way. But if you listen to any other track on this one, that's the one I want you to go with. But number 1, and I cannot believe that this band didn't have a bigger catalog. And I don't know what happened. I don't understand what happened, because, man, these ladies were so incredibly talented. Absolutely incredible. And, you know, looking here now, like, they've done some shows, I guess, you know, in recent years. But it's been a while. You know, it's been, I guess they hadn't had an album out like 2015. But it's Seether. And from the very beginning, like the way that they harmonized, and they're still playing, it looks like. They just haven't put any new music out. But it's one of those things, like Nina Gordon left the band, and then it's like they'd kind of lost something. I mean, truly. Louise Post has kind of done their thing. They had a hiatus for a while, but they are back playing shows. They just haven't done a new album in a while. But, man, like the very first time that we saw these ladies perform, it was remarkable. American Thighs was the debut album, and then Eight Arms to Hold You was great. And that's like, both of those were gold albums, but there's just so many great tracks in here that didn't get played on the radio. And that's kind of the point that I'm making. You know, they were not like one of these bands that had one hit off the first couple of albums, even though like MTV kind of wore those out. But like, there was so many great ones off American Thighs, and it's worth your time and effort to go back and listen to that. But we're gonna go with our gateway track at Seether. You can't fight the Seether, man. But man, those ladies, the way they harmonized, the way they played guitar, it was incredible. And of course, you know, Eight Arms to Hold You was another great one, of course. And it's what's so funny too, like when Volcano Girls came out, you know, it's like, I loved the part of, just leave me lying here, right? I mean, it's like, just leave me alone, right? Incredible. And I don't know kind of how they lost their way, but they did. And again, it's good to see them. Again, I didn't know until we did this. I didn't know that they were going to put some new music out. And that's what happens, man. It's like bands kind of leave your state of consciousness for a while, and then they come back, but you've kind of moved on, right? That's one of those things that you just go back and think about. It's like, man, I remember how great they were the very first time you heard it. And I just loved it. I absolutely loved Veruca Salt. And of course, that you know, comes from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I think that's right. But anyway, nevertheless, you owe it to yourself to check out some Veruca Salt. And these ladies rock. And it's not in an artificial way. It's not some industry plant where they're like, hey, we need a female vocalist. These ladies put their own band together, and they did it their own way. And I have so much respect for them just because of the fact they never really, like, played upon anything other than their songwriting and musical ability. And there's so many people that are so image conscious in rock music, and especially in pop music. That just wasn't the case with Veruca Salt. There was just an air of authenticity with them. And that's one of the reasons. I was like, after Eight Arms to Hold You kind of left the charts for a while, and they didn't put another album out for like 3-4 years, it's like they kind of missed their window. But you never know what's going on in people's lives. But I can tell you, everybody involved in rock music that was like in the scene, when these ladies came out, everybody took notice. And if you like a female rocker, and I do, I love it when it's a real thing, right? To me, Veruca Salt is the best female band of the 90s. And I don't care what you say. I'll fight you on that, right? Everybody's like, oh, but Steve, there's Hole. Not even close. Not even close. But Steve, there's L7. Not even close. So stop. But the Breeders, stop. Stop. No. 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 We're not doing it. You go back and listen to this, and I think you're going to be pleased. And what I would encourage you to do, too, is like, you want to go hear the singles again, but just let it play. Just let it play. And I think, especially Eight Arms to Hold You, I think you're going to be like, dude, this is better than I remember. That album holds up. And I think, you know, American Thighs does, too. It's just so great to go back sometimes and kind of re-remember an old favorite, right? And that's what this Veruca Salt thing does for me. So thanks again for the suggestion. And for those of you that wondered, what was the song that Eric sent in and said, hey, this was kind of in my wheelhouse here, it was Our Lady Peace. And I was like, dude, I'm happy to talk about them again. And so again, these are kind of some of their contemporaries. I think you'll enjoy these. We talk a lot about 80s on here and some 70s, but the 90s, again, was a great decade in music. Of course, it's the early 2000s where we kind of lost our way. I mean, truly. And I feel so bad for those high school kids and college kids, because they look back and they think, oh, the music was so great. It wasn't. And I think when you look back in hindsight yourself, you're going to feel that's the case too. It wasn't really around into the late 2000s, the early 2010s, where rock music kind of found its strength again. And it's just interesting to kind of go through all this, because every record company, of course, after the Napster stuff, was like chasing the single. And that's one of the things that I think has really disrupted the music industry. And now all of a sudden, the artists have kind of figured out, hey, instead of us going into the studio and spending $3 million to record an album, we can just like do a string of singles at home and then send them to be remastered and save money. And we're more likely to put new albums out because we can just kind of piece this thing together instead of just hating each other after 6 months in the studio. So I think, again, the music industry has made a big comeback. And you guys, obviously, streaming helps get the music out there, but they don't make a lot of money. So if you want your favorite acts to continue to tour, you need to buy merch, you need to go to shows, because that's where they make their money these days. Nobody is getting rich off record sales anymore. It just doesn't happen. And I don't care what everybody tells you. I got too many friends in the industry, I can tell you. That's just not how it happens. And people don't understand, too, like when you get an advance on a record deal and they give you that money, it truly is an advance, right? So then you have to pay back the advance. So you get $1 million advance, record an album. Until the record company has made that $1 million back, you don't make another nickel. And you're basically on the road playing every show that they can possibly book you at until you can pay that money back. And so it's almost like indentured servitude. It really is. So I understand when you see a lot of this stuff on Instagram and everybody's flexing, they're just flexing. Most of those people are broke. And that's the truth of the matter. I hate to kind of burst your bubble a little bit, but a lot of these people are really not living the lifestyle they portray, because so many of these people are living in houses that are leased, and they don't own these mansions and things like that. And then one day when the record company gets sick and tired of dealing with them, they get evicted, and then they're right back where they started. And it's a shame that that's how the world works, but that's exactly what happens. So if you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out and let us know, just like Eric did. Best way to do that is to hit up my friend Roy Samanti on X, and he is completely up to date with our list. I'm sure our new list will be out soon. You can find our great list on Spotify under Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67, and maybe just follow Roy on Twitter too. He's not going to spam your feed with like his food and pictures of his cats, stuff like that. Instead, he didn't do that, right? It's all Mississippi State stuff, and it's all our stuff. And you can follow me on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart. We do. We love them more than a friend because they have the things we want, right? The Bible tells us not to covet, but I tell you, every time I go in there, I'm thinking, man, I wish I had all this stuff, right? Even if I didn't have it for myself, I'd want to give it to some of you or some of my friends and family. And you're my friends and family too, but you know what I mean, right? Wouldn't it be great to just decorate a room for somebody else? And you're thinking, Steve, I don't have that kind of coin. Well, maybe what you do is buy one decorative item and kind of get them started. Or buy them some apparel. Every Bulldog in your life wants more Mississippi State merchandise. Don't overthink it. Don't try to get cute. Don't reinvent the mousetrap. Just buy Mississippi State, folks, Mississippi State merch. And the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise is at Campus Bookmart. And you can get your shirts. Underdog is still a dog. Kind of a cool thing. But nevertheless, no matter what you're looking for, Mississippi State related, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time that you're in Starkville. If you can't make it to town and would love to support a Starkville business, which makes you a great person, right? We all need as much good karma as we can get. Support the town you love, which is Starkville. Visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely complete. You guys like me talking about Ole Miss. It's so interesting. Like, I will live in peace if people will let me. I mean, honestly, I have already won my wars, right? But I talked a little bit about this tampering thing, and a lot of people have hit me up. Many of you think nothing's going to happen. Many of you hope something happens, and then there's some of you that believe something's going to happen. I'm in the third category. I believe something will happen. I think it's been too public. I think it's embarrassing for the CDC. I think it's embarrassing for the NCAA Enforcement Division, which is now part of the CDC. Our CSC, pardon me, not the CDC. What am I talking about? It's the College Sports Commission. I think something will happen. Now, and of course, you know, Ole Miss out here playing poker again. Because you remember the whole thing, like they accused us of being snitches when they got in trouble. It's like somebody said, yeah, you know, everybody speeds. Yeah, but Ole Miss was like barreling 100 miles an hour in a 55 with like, a bushel of marijuana in the trunk, and then like daring everybody to come after them. You know, mutually assured destruction, right? We'll get you too. We'll take everybody else down with us. Well, nobody else went on probation, right? I mean, so I just don't buy any of that. And my thing too is, and I tweeted this out to some Ole Miss people, Instead of the whataboutism, how about some beaboutism, right? If you believe that you have credible information, that there has been tampering, and you think that people aren't playing by the rules, you've got an obligation to turn that in. You do. You've got a duty to cooperate with any NCAA investigation. It's part of the bylaws. And people are like, well, you know, a court this and a court. Guys, listen, if we can't enforce our own rules, then there's no point in us continuing with college athletics. Simple as that. And that's one of the things that I don't think a lot of people understand. Everybody's like, well, Steve, it's a free market economy. You know what? But there still has to be, I mean, there are rules for trading stocks, right? There's rules in everything. There have to be rules in NCAA. And one of the things that I think you're seeing more of this already, and this is why I hope that the Save Sports thing works out, because you're starting to see Olympic sports kind of falling by the wayside. There are people like, we just can't afford to do it anymore. We just can't. We can't afford to do it. And the more that the rev share cap is raised, the more likely you're going to see that, because there's going to be so much competition. And you're already seeing like people spending $40 and $50 million on a football roster, right? And the cap is, right, this year, 20.5, right? So then you're supplementing that with NIL dollars and private third-party deals and things of that nature. And there's a lot of things that haven't been cleared by the CSC because it doesn't fit the parameters. And the CSC had that big win in that mediation with Nebraska. And everybody's like, hey, well, this is going to shake things up. Well, guess what? It didn't shake things up. And now this new bill that will require a lot of debate before it becomes law kind of puts some teeth in all this stuff. And it's just a matter of time, whether it's the SCORE Act or this new act that's co-sponsored by Ted Cruz. There is going at some point be national intervention here. And there will be an antitrust exemption granted. And there's some people like, oh, no, they can't. Well, they said that about baseball 2 years ago. I don't know if you remember that. It's been almost 100 years now, if not more. People said that baseball, professional baseball, would never get an antitrust exemption. Well, they did, and then that led to other sports doing it. Well, we're in the same situation now. I mean, that's the reality of it. We are in the same situation now where college athletics is now a bigger business than ever. And when you have big business and you have tax dollars at stake, there's going to be federal oversight. And there needs to be. And listen, I'm not a huge government guy either. Okay, understand, I don't like a lot of overreach by government. And I've read some things about, you know, the Starkville leadership as of late that's concerning to me. Not Mississippi State, but the city of Starkville. There's some things. I don't know all the facts. I'm not going to share all the details that I have learned here with you, because I've only heard one side of the story. But I don't like government overreach. I don't like government interfering with what we all have going on. But when we have a national problem and state laws vary from state to state, there needs to be a leveling of the playing field. And that's as simple as it can be. And again, next year, the rev share cap goes up to $21.6 million. And then again, and then again. And then again, it's never coming back down. And so eventually what they're going to do is try to cap this, but there'll still be the opportunity to do some NIL stuff. So all that's going to be a thing. And the transfer portal is going to be a thing. And it needs to be, okay? I don't like the 4 and 5 transfer thing. I don't like it. I think it makes a mockery of the system. I know many of you are like, hey, well, you know, well, regular students can transfer too. Yeah, regular students more times than not are paying for school. They're not also building a brand with a particular school, right? Many people are just trying to get their education. Some people change majors and that sort of stuff. And so let's don't act like we're similarly situated here. You're already going to graduate debt-free. That was already the premise of college athletics in the first place, and we rolled out these scholarship plans. And then all of a sudden, you had the opportunity to make a little money and kind of put some money aside and get a head start at life. And now we have basically absolute chaos. So it's not like, you know, you're a political science major that transfers. You know, they're not leaving with a pocket full of dough. They're not leaving for an NIL opportunity. And so what we're doing here is we have coaches and third parties all around the country that are incentivizing players to get in the portal so that they can enrich themselves. at the exploitation of these athletes. And that's the thing, too. They've exploited these athletes for years. They're being exploited now more than ever. And that's one of the things I do like about the new bill, assuming that it passes, is that there's a 5% cap. And like some of these agents out here are like, oh, this is too much. Guys, a lot of these agents are doing nothing. There's some out there that do a great job. They're very professional in what they do. And there are others out there. And I'll give you an example. I won't tell you what school it is, but it's a player that many of us know. But anyway, he signed with a school and had some academic work to do. And as a result, there wasn't any rev share extended as part of the offering. It's like, hey, our academic people will talk to people at your school. We'll tell you what you need to do, but it's up to you to do the work. You need to go to summer school. Well, so now that this person is qualified, they're like, well, hey, well, now I need some money. And it's like, dude, what are you talking about? Get in here and prove yourself. Well, then, yeah, you can get some money. Well, then maybe I need to ask for my release. No, I mean, right? I mean, you see what I'm saying? It's like you were in a situation where you had nothing. You had nothing. You didn't even have a real opportunity until you improved your academic city. And then now here we are, now that we've done it, now that everybody's stuck in here with you and said, okay, here's the situation. Now all of a sudden we had to go hire an agent. Oh, well, they're not treating me right. I need to go get an agent. And it's just some dude. Like, it's not anybody licensed by the state. I almost said the state. It's not even in Mississippi. But the reality of it is, there's a lot of people out there, it's like, hey, well, this is a chance for me to enrich myself. And the reality of that is, too, is I'm against anything that's kind of goes outside the lines of that. Because basically, you're not an agent. You're a bully. That's what you are. You're like, well, we'll just get him to do this. Well, there's a lot of these young people, if they didn't have somebody in their corner kind of giving them an academic plan of progress, then they, if they're lucky, will get an out-of-state grant to play junior college football in Mississippi or Texas or somewhere like that, if they're lucky. And so that's really the alternative. It's like, okay, you can go to junior college, because if you think anybody else still has money left at this point, you're kidding yourself, because nobody does. It's all allocated for other players. Because you weren't even expected to qualify. Now you have, and they've saved a spot for you, and you've got the opportunity to go to college and then make something of yourself, prove yourself this year, and then perhaps renegotiate a deal after your freshman year, and you get in there, take care of your academics, and be a good teammate and things like that. Then you can get some money, right? I think that's fair. That's how life works. But we have people out there that are trying to kind of railroad this process, and that's why we need oversight. We do. And I think anybody that's against this doesn't understand what's at stake. If we don't get our arms around this, we're going to have a lot of problems. And some of the non-revenue producing sports, a lot of our Olympic sports, a lot of our women's sports are the ones that are going to pay the price. You know, I remember talking to Samantha Ricketts last year when we had our media opportunity. And she could say, we don't have any NIL. We don't. We don't have any NIL. And I'm sure they've got a little bit, but, I mean, it's just kind of a rhetorical comment, really. I mean, do you really think there's a lot of college softball NIL out there nationally? There's a few players you know about in Texas Tech and probably some of the bigger schools in the SEC. But there's not a lot of NIL to be had. And, you know, there's a few players, you know, like, you know, Briley St. Clair, beautiful as she is, as talented as she was. You know, she did some deals with Maybelline, people like that, you know. But that's the exception rather than the rule. Do you think there's going to be more NIL for college softball or college soccer or women's basketball around the country for the average player? No, there's not. Because all of that money is going to be pulled into men's athletics because that's where the revenue is. That's just the reality of life. And you say, you know, Steve, it's just basic economics. It is, but that doesn't mean it's fair. And I'm not saying that we need to have a certain allocation of NIL and rev share for certain sports. You know, that's up for the administrators to kind of figure out. But there's just a lot of these things out there that have to be talked through. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you bring a large group to town, and you should. Yeah, you should. You owe it to yourself to get out and make some memories with the people you love the most. You've seen it on TV, you've seen it in movies, and always thought, man, wouldn't it be great to have everybody under one roof? Yeah, and what happens eventually is your family outgrows your ability to house them, even for a night or two. That's when you lean on the fine folks at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. We did the same because our family continues to grow. You know, your kids get significant others. Next thing you know, the grandkids start showing up, and it's just difficult to get everybody under the regular house, right? Or into the regular house. You know what I'm saying. But, yeah, check out the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page comes up. You can see pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. You'll be glad you did. That full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands on 182, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three bath. Whether it's a ball game weekend, a midweek work retreat, whatever you need, cousins reunion, whatever, they can accommodate you. Now, when you do that Google search, you're going to have some booking options pop up. Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. The Evolve website, promo code BSR10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. You'll be glad you did. Again, I'm speaking with the voice of experience. We had an amazing time, and I suspect you will too. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, let's talk a little bit about this bracket. UCLA has got a couple of guys that are a little bit tender, so we don't know if they're going to be part of it this weekend. And the reality of it is, I don't think it's going to matter. UCLA, obviously the overall number one seed. They should get an easier bracket. They have. You got St. Mary's as a four. You got Virginia Tech as a two, which I think is a little bit overseeded. Then you got Cal Poly. I don't think there's anybody in this bracket that is capable of beating UCLA twice. I don't even think the three teams combined can do that. So look for UCLA to advance. It's no hot take there. I still like this Morgantown Regional. I really do. I think West Virginia was the weakest of the host seeds, and I think if Arkansas has a beef, it's with them and not us. And again, you go back to this West Virginia team, 17 in the RPI. So again, if you look at it mathematically, what we talked about, the top 19 teams minus the three anomalies got to host, which enabled West Virginia to sneak in there. But they put them as the number 16 seed. This bracket's loaded. Binghamton, not going to be much of a challenge. Even though they had a really good year, congratulate them on that. But Wake Forest and Kentucky, I'd love for Kentucky to win this, but I think someone other than West Virginia does. Whether it's Wake or it's Kentucky, I think when we get together on Monday, we're going to be talking about a West Virginia loss. That's what I think. We'll see how things go. I do think Southern Miss is in trouble, too. And that's the next bracket on our list. I think Little Rock is not the typical four. I haven't seen what Southern Miss's pitching plans are. But I think if you throw off against Little Rock, I think you're really putting yourself in a very, very, very precarious position because of the fact you may not get to where you want to go. I think that's one of those things you begin to think. Like Little Rock is 36-26. You know, they didn't have a great year last year, but they had a great postseason. Maybe you've forgotten. You know, Chris Curry's doing a good job up there. They were 27-34, and they went to a regional final with LSU last year. They've got more talent. They've had more success this year. They actually beat LSU, the eventual national champions, 10-4, and had a lead in that winner-take-all regional final and just couldn't finish the deal. So, again, I think Southern Miss has one of the more difficult four seeds. Then you've got Virginia as a two, and then Jacksonville State as a three. I think it'll be an aggregate effort, but I think someone other than Southern Miss, and I think maybe we go with Virginia here. I'd almost like to see Jacksonville State win it. But honestly, I think any of these teams are capable of winning this thing. And I don't know that I could say that about other four seeds. I think Little Rock might pull an upset in this thing. Not to win the regional, but I think they may get Southern Miss. They may. You know, we'll see. I think Florida got, I won't say a cake regional, because they did get Miami. That's a very solid number two, one of the better number two seeds in the tournament. Ryder is no big deal. And, you know, Troy is a team, too, that, you know, could really rise up and make this thing interesting. I do think Florida advances, though. Again, back to the Chapel Hill Regional. I know a lot of people think this is just one of those things, right? But listen, East Carolina is a very solid mid-major. They're good enough to win a game or two in this thing. And obviously, East Carolina was a team that, you know my feelings about this program. It's almost like Gonzaga basketball. Like, eventually they think, well, they'll make a run. But this regional, they can't make a run, but they can make some noise. I like Tennessee to win this bracket. Now, again, it's going to depend on how Landon Mack is feeling. If Tennessee's pitching staff is ready to go, they have a real opportunity here. Appenzeller, of course, has kind of faded a little bit down the stretch. He's kind of hit the freshman wall. UNC has the best pitching in that bracket. They don't have the best offense. I think Tennessee does. And I think ultimately, the longer the series goes, the better it is for Tennessee, just because Tennessee can whack it. And then as you get into games 3 and 4, you're going to start seeing weaker pitching. And if you get into a regional final, you're going to be facing a midweek pitcher. I don't care if you're North Carolina or not. Throwing midweek pitching against Tennessee is dicey. Texas A&M. You know, Texas State could probably win a game or two here. I just don't know what to expect from USC. But I do know that Texas A&M in that ballpark with a packed out crowd, with their ability to hit the long ball, that offense is legit. I know pitching has been a real challenge for them. But I like A&M to advance. I think it's between A&M and USC when it's all said and done. Lincoln, that again, I believe that is the regional from hell. I absolutely believe that. We talk about, you know, four seeds, and everybody has an ace. Everybody. Nobody would have made it this far with not having a pretty good Friday night guy, right? And that's the case, I think, for South Dakota State. And granted, you never know how things are going to go compared to what happens in your league. But, you know, looking at the Jackrabbits, of course, that played here back in 2017, they got some guys that can pitch a little bit, right? You know, Sam Schlecht, he's got 14 starts. Sam Novotny is, you know, 3-7. But they've had some bullpen success here. The team ERA is not great, so I don't look for them to make any real noise here, but wouldn't it be something if they could pick up a dub somewhere? Ole Miss and Arizona State is one of the best first-round matchups in this tournament. I think one of those two teams win it. I'm actually going to pick Ole Miss to win this regional. I kind of broke it down the other day. Nebraska just can't hit the long ball. Arizona State and Ole Miss can. And again, when you get into a regional final, it's a lot of times it becomes an offensive game. I don't think Nebraska has the offense to keep up. I think Auburn got a really good draw. Milwaukee, that shouldn't be a problem. UCF could be a challenge. And NC State, you got to wonder how inspired they're going to play knowing that Elliott Avin is retiring. That's one of those things that you just simply never know. And NC State is a team, obviously, that at any point could put some things together. It's not one of the more talented teams. I think in the end, Auburn beats NC State. They advance. And that's the left part of your bracket. We'll start at the top of the bracket on the right side now. Georgia Tech, I talked to Chris Simonis earlier. He and Dan McDonald and some of their old Citadel buddies are actually in Atlanta to support the Citadel. And what a great thing that is, too. But Oklahoma, I think, is capable of maybe winning a game from Tech. I just think in the end that Tech offense is going to wear everybody's pitching out. The Citadel comes in as a 3. UIC, who is a really good mid-major team, probably doesn't get enough respect as a Midwestern mid-major. They're just not going to have the juice to compete with Georgia Tech. That Georgia Tech offense is for real. You talk to your friends around college baseball and they'll tell you, a lot of people like me thought they would eventually fade, but now here they are as the number 2 seed and won't see a top 8 seed, you know, for a long, long time until they get to Omaha. And they should. Kansas, again, this is a regional that I think is maybe a little bit undervalued. I don't think enough people are talking about this one. And, you know, Northeastern is in there. We played them last year, the Huskies. And they're not the same team they were, in the middle of the year, you begin to kind of wonder if they were going to make it. They end up 38-20. See, won a lot of games, but 22-8 in the regular season. And it's always a great thing, you know. And they're in the CAA, and they roll through that tournament. They lose the first game to Hofstra. Remember that? Hofstra, we talked about them beginning of the year. We thought that they may be a team that could be a little bit competitive in that league. Turns out they weren't. But they beat Campbell, right? I mean, so Northeastern loses to Hofstra, then gets UNC Wilmington. They knock off Hofstra in a very competitive game, and then they take down the number one seed Campbell, Fighting Camels, in back-to-back games to advance. And they're a team that's used to winning. And you got to wonder, like, if Kansas gets caught looking ahead a little bit here, because you got Arkansas, obviously, it's a very motivated team, a team that's very angry because they didn't get the host, and they're still talking about it. They're 21 in the RPI. Then you've got Missouri State. It's 23 in the RPI. In there is a three seed. I mean, they're right there on the cut line of being a two. And you could make a case that in some regionals they could have been a two. Guys, they're ahead of both Oklahoma, Jacksonville State, Virginia, and Coastal in the RPI. And Missouri State's a team that can really swing it. And so I think Kansas loses this, but I think it's Arkansas that emerges. Arkansas playing some good baseball. They just ran out of pitching against Georgia and got mercy ruled, but don't let that fool you. The thing about Arkansas, if Zach Stewart really gets rolling, he is a guy, obviously, who's a little bit banged up, and we played him up there because offensively they can be a little bit handicapped. But Zach Stewart is a very physical left-handed hitter. They have an opportunity to hit the long ball, and I think, again, this is a very motivated team. Dave Van Horn will have this us-against-the-world mentality, so we'll see how that plays out. But I like Arkansas to advance. Florida State, this is having a representative on the committee regional. Coastal has been very much beaten up this year physically. A lot of people felt like, you know, if Coastal gets it together, they could really wreck somebody's postseason plans. I just don't think that's the case. I think Coastal lost too much from last year, and then on top of that, they've lost some players to injury this year. And so that's one of those things that I think hurts them. Now, are they good enough to go win a game and make this thing interesting? You better believe it. But it's just kind of wild to look back. This is a team that played for the National Championship last year. They won 37 games this year, so they're not too far off the pace. But people forget, you know, they were top eight last year, and now there are two. They'll play Northern Illinois. That shouldn't be a problem. And then St. John's will play Florida State. I think Florida State advances and takes care of Coastal in a regional final. Now, we talked about Alabama. I think they are one of the more precarious host sites, especially considering they were a top eight. You had to follow the letter of the law, and they deserved to be a top eight because the metrics simply supported it. That understood, I don't know that I would want to swing against Oklahoma State. They'll get Alabama State first. Oklahoma State gets USC upstate. This is a great regional for either Oklahoma State or Alabama because there's really just the two of them. I don't think there's a third team in here that's capable of winning this thing. And you go back and you look at what USC Upstate has done. Of course, that's the former school of Noah Sullivan. They went 33-28. They're five games over 500. And then they're in there as the three. You could make a case they could probably be a four somewhere. So Alabama got a great regional here, but they got Oklahoma State, a team that can really, really swing it. And that's a home run friendly park. And I know that Alabama's throwing Tyler Fay, which I don't get. I think that's a mistake. I think Oklahoma State upsets Alabama. I think Alabama is the first national seed, top eight national seed to go down. That's my feeling today. Some people were talking about, you know, UC Santa Barbara is throwing off against Tarleton State. I think they should. I just don't know if the Gauchos have enough to really challenge Texas. And I know that Texas has been a little beat up. And honestly, you know my feelings about the Gauchos anyway. Again, they should not have hosted in 24. That said, I think they're a team that could make things a little uncomfortable. They finished 20 games over 500 at 38-18, 22-8 in their conference. And road teams typically fare well in regionals. They're 16-7 in true road games. And they opened up the year playing it at Southern Miss, and they won game one and ultimately lost the rubber game 6-5. But it's just so interesting to go back and kind of look at their schedule. Like, they put Utah on the schedule. You know what? Hey, good for them, right? It's a Power 4 team. It doesn't have a high RPI, though, but they won all three of those games. And the Gauchos swept through Long Beach State, who's been terrible this year. You know, they lose two at UC Davis, which is just inexcusable in the Big West. But, again, they just kind of rally back here and make some things happen. And they beat Cal State Fullerton in the Big West tournament and then lose to Cal Poly, who won the tournament, and then lose to UC Santa Barbara or San Diego. So I just don't think there's enough consistency for them to pull this thing off. Even though Texas is beat up, I look for Texas to advance. Oregon will play Yale, a team with the fewest number of home runs in the tournament. I don't think it's going to be a factor. Oregon State and Washington State. Again, I love the Pac-12 element of this. I love the fact that these teams are getting back together. I think it was smart of the committee. They'll sell a lot of tickets. Now, I like the regional aspect of this, but I like Oregon State to win this thing. And I know that Oregon State has played a pretty weak schedule, but they in Oregon, it's a rivalry thing. Oregon State feels like they should have hosted. They shouldn't, but I like them to come out of here and then face Texas in the Super. Mississippi State, Lipscomb, Cincinnati, you know, I guess the real question is who's the number two, right, when it's all said and done? I think Louisiana is probably exhausted after last week. And the fact that, you know, Herman may not pitch and that, you know, listen, they've got some other guys. They don't hit the long ball. Cincinnati does. The Cajuns are throwing one of their better pitchers and, as you know, Coach Dagg said, maybe one of the hottest pitchers in the country against Cincinnati to throw in their ace. It should be a very entertaining game. I just don't think that Louisiana has another run in them like they had last week. Lipscomb just doesn't have the horses. I think it boils down to Mississippi State beating Cincinnati. And I think Cincinnati's one of these things, too, where they have to come through the loser's bracket, right? I think it'll exhaust their pitching depth, and ultimately Mississippi State will probably win this game, this series in three games. Georgia gets Long Island, Boston College, and Liberty. I think Boston College is the only team capable of making this a game, but I think Georgia just will overpower all three of these teams. I don't think there's a lot of jeopardy here for the Bulldogs, but as many people have pointed out, a lot of people felt that way last year, but Georgia had a couple of Power Four teams in there. You got just one this year, and granted, Liberty has been pretty good as a mid-major, but there's just not enough offense in this regional to really challenge Georgia. So I think ultimately Georgia wins the regional. Of course, you know, we're pulling for BC, right? We're pulling for anybody, because if we win our regional and Georgia gets upset, we get to host a Super next week, and how incredible would that be? I think we'd all enjoy that, but the reality of that is Georgia is just so good. Now, the one thing is, the more times you play them, the better you get a good handle on them, and that's both ways. But you know, some of their people, I've noticed, have not been happy about Mississippi State being their super regional opponent. So we'll see how things play out there. But, you know, that's the bracket. So as I see it, to summarize, UCLA, and we're going to go – let's just for fun, we're going to go with Kentucky. Okay, we'll go with Kentucky. And then – I still think it's Virginia against Florida in the next Super, Tennessee against Texas A&M, Ole Miss against Auburn, Georgia against Mississippi State, Oregon State against Texas, Oklahoma State against Florida State, Arkansas against Georgia Tech. And I think that's probably where the ride ends for Arkansas. But, you know, you got a lot of SEC teams that could be head up in the Super Regionals, and you know, that's, we expect that every year. But it's interesting, too. One of those – I've seen a lot of people talk extensively about USC, you know, about how they feel like that they were not treated properly and they've got an axe to grind. And maybe that's true and correct, but I just don't know what's going to happen. Sorry about that. I just don't know what's going to happen when USC takes the field. Do they pout? Are they motivated? Could they go in there and create some havoc? I just don't know enough about them to feel confident that they can. But it's going to be a fun weekend of baseball. And you know, a few things to kind of prepare you for, too. If you hadn't been to town in a while, I know some of you come pretty much every home weekend and some others, this is a special occasion for you. Understand that they are still working on that roundabout right there at Stone Boulevard and 182. And if you don't know the name of the street, as you're coming down 12 going to campus, some of you take that right and just kind of cut through campus and go the back way. Well, that's going to be cordoned off. And it has been for weeks. So you'll have to go down the College View. If you want to get on campus earlier, you'll have to do it somewhere else. So you will not be able to take that turn where Stone Boulevard is. Now, that it will probably be full of pedestrians anyway as people stay across the street. That's important to understand. Now, many of you got your tickets added to your dog tag on Wednesday. Let me encourage you, if you hadn't done so, go ahead and upload those to your wallet so we can you know, kind of save on the lines. We talk about this in football a lot too. But we're going to have a lot of people on campus that are not routine visitors to campus. They're not going to know where to go. There's going to be some delays. So you can kind of prevent some of those delays by being a veteran and being prepared for the big crowds, because we expect there to be big crowds, especially on Saturday. I know there's a lot of people that took off on Thursday. Traffic started getting thick this evening in Starkville. There's a lot of people that are already here and ready to go service and kind of get everything rolling for the weekend. And this is something we've been looking forward to for a long time. But a lot of people have asked, you know, will they have SRO tickets for sale at the box office? Yes, they will, but I would encourage you just to buy online. Anyway, you can go to healthstate.com and you can buy the tickets there. Save yourself the trouble of having to stand in a line. You just download those tickets, add them to your wallet, walk up and get them scanned. The in-between games, the berms will be cleaned out. The stadium will be emptied out, because even if you have all session tickets, not everybody does, and there's going to be some people that have to come and go. So the only way that we can be clear about that is to just empty the stadium. And I know that that's not a lot of fun for you guys, but that's the reality. You're like, I don't want to have to get in line again. You got to have your buddies out there that kind of save you a spot. I understand, and I appreciate your exuberance for college baseball. But I don't think, at least on Friday night, you're going to have a ton of traffic getting to those berms. I think you will on Saturday night. So understand, plan accordingly, right? One of the things to remember, too, is unless they've changed the policy, you know, the walk-up stuff all changes and they play all this NCAA-approved music, and there's just a lot to it. You know, sometimes we'll sneak one in just because we are cute, but it will be a little bit different. It is the NCAA tournament, and they have a, you know, representation here. We had a chance to see them today, and, you know, they're already putting up the NCAA banners and all the greatest show on dirt signage and things like that. So it's going to be a little different experience, but at the end of the day, the Diamond Dogs are playing baseball. So again, be early when you can. Be smart about that, just because of the fact, again, there's going to be a lot of people, and God love them, there's a lot of people that work in the event management group. They don't know where you need to park. They just know that this, hey, I'm in lot five, and if you have a lot five pass, I'm going to let you in. If you're not a lot five, I got to tell you to go somewhere else. So take some personal accountability, look at the parking map, know where you're going to go. There are going to be a lot of people that don't listen to this show and won't listen to you that will be in a scenario where they're just going to see somebody in a yellow vest and ask them, and it's going to slow things down. One of the things that I would encourage, too, for those of you that come onto campus from 182 and then pass by the Bryan Building and Chadwick Lake and all that, if you know that you need to be in the left-hand lane, go ahead and get in the left-hand lane, because there's going to be a lot of people that get in the right-hand lane that don't know where they're going. And for those of us that park at Seal, that's going to be a problem, right? Because they're going to back it up, and then, you know, it happens for every big event, and it's not that we're upset about it. We just have learned to expect it. So any little steps that we can take to kind of make things smoother, those of us that come to games regularly, is appreciated by everybody. It's one of those things that everybody maybe not admits it, but they're just grateful that those that are veterans that kind of understand how this whole thing works takes the steps to ensure that things go smoothly. Because, again, there's going to be people that have no idea what's going on. And, again, it's not their fault. They're just not regulars. They just want to come cheer on the Bulldogs just like you and I do. And they just don't know where to go. And so we need to be prepared for that. And, again, there is a lot of construction in the Cotton District. You know, we're building the hotel out there, Hotel Madeline. And so there is very, very limited parking in the Cotton District. Like when you push like past Bulldog Burger and the landing right there, all of that is they had it. It's been a while since I've been that way, but they had it all kind of fenced off. And, you know, historically people would just pay to park there and walk the campus. I don't know what they'll do for the weekend, but if that's where you're betting on parking, you might want to bet somewhere else, because I can't promise you that's going to be available. Because, again, a ton of construction going on in that area, and so it is a construction site. They're going to err on the side of caution, and they're going to, you know, cordon some things off and kind of put some fencing up. So, again, your favorite routine parking spot that maybe you park at for football and walk in, it may not be available. So just be prepared for that. But we can't wait for you guys to get here, and I'm going to get the show up, and we'll get the story up, and we'll already have maybe about half dozen stories up and running for you guys before, you know, as you make your way to Starkville, if you're not already here, but certainly in time for the game. And, again, we're excited for Mississippi State softball, no matter what happens against Texas. You know, we are excited that we have come this far, and not to say we're satisfied, but we're still proud. Right. And that's the thing, too. We're in a position we never thought we'd be in. And like you, I want to keep winning. You know, I do. But we'll take on Texas Friday evening in an elimination game. Tennessee beat Texas today. So this is a loser leaves town match in Oklahoma City. That'll be 6 p.m. on Friday. And I suspect there'll be a lot of people just kind of hanging out, keeping up with that, you know, in addition to what's happening with your regionals around the country. And so, no matter what happens out in Oklahoma City, we're incredibly proud of the Mississippi State softball program and everybody connected to it. If you hadn't done so, visit DutyNobleBook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles. Of course, that's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. It's incredible the reception that we've had for some of these books, and I thank you guys so much for your support. And then come float with us at True Rest Floats by Starkville. Dial 662-268-7601. We're pretty much booked up for Friday and Saturday. There's probably room for a few solo floaters, but it's going to be to call her and just to be sure about that. Sunday, there is some openings on Sunday. So if you're going to be in town and you want to float and it's kind of a novelty thing for you and you always wanted to try it, this would be a good opportunity to do so. But you do have to have an appointment. So please call Dana at 662-268-7601. You can book online, but if you are a first-time floater, we ask that you come 30 minutes early because there's a form you got to fill out and a video. There's just some intake stuff you have to do. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. Get the most comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State sports that the university has ever known. And nobody covers Mississippi State baseball like we do. We take it very seriously. It's a passion for us, and we have looked forward for this weekend for a long time. We hoped for it. And now we have it, and we're going to go out there and enjoy it, and we hope that you will too. And reminder, if you see me walking around, I may have some Mississippi State buttons for free to give you, baseball buttons. We've got those ready. They're in the car. They're ready to be handed out, and it's just a token of our appreciation for you coming and cheering for Mississippi State. And, it's one of those things that we take very seriously, but also, too, we understand a lot of people come to these games, and it's a commitment. Right. And we'd like to give you a souvenir and just, you know, something to kind of let you know that we appreciate you coming out cheering for the Bulldogs. If you've seen me at road games, you know, at times I do this. Like we went to Arlington. I passed out probably 100 of these things just to thank people for coming and cheering for the Bulldogs. So if you see me out there, come up. They're going to be gone quickly. You need to be prepared for that. They will absolutely be gone sooner rather than later. And we look forward to seeing you guys this weekend. And Hell State, right? Go Dogs as we try to win this regional. We get back together on Monday. We'll have a lot to talk about. We will. And hopefully, come Sunday, we're celebrating a regional win, not having to play a baseball game on Monday. Hopefully, that's the case. But nevertheless, we're going to cover whatever happens. And we look forward to seeing each and every one of you. And again, drive safe. take care of yourself. Don't drink too much. For many of you, you know, sometimes you kind of overdo it, right? Let's be smart about this. We can celebrate later after everybody's home safe, right? Not to say that we want you to, you know, restrict yourself, but at the same time, to be responsible in everything you do. There's a lot of people in town this weekend, a lot of families, a lot of people that are not going to be partying. They're just here to, you know, cheer for the Bulldogs. And so let's all respect each other and let's work together as a family and a community to make sure that everybody gets home safe. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.